Welcome into the Talking Tide podcast. I'm Chase Goodbrother, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, joined as always by Travis Ryer. We are breaking down Alabama's resounding win over the Wisconsin Badgers, 42-10, the final score. We, of course, will look around the SEC in the final minutes of the podcast, as we typically do. But first, Travis, your thoughts on this game. Obviously, Alabama had this thing well in hand fairly quickly, fell down 3-0 early, erased that right away. And before you knew it, the Crimson Tide had this thing under control.
Hey, Wisconsin gets out to the 3-0 lead, right? 53-yard field goal, but lose Tyler Van Dyke, starting quarterback, in the process. I don't know how big of an impact that had on the game in terms of the big picture. It felt inevitable just based on speed and overall athleticism, roster quality in general, that at some point Alabama was likely to take control of that game on Saturday, Chase. But pretty much a thorough victory, I would say. You know, always some things we can pick apart, and I know we will.
We'll do it for sure. A turning point, let's go there. It's got to be that lightning strike of a touchdown drive at the end of the first half, right? Alabama takes it. 73 yards, I think, and two pass plays, 17 seconds of game clock to add seven right before the half. Of course, a big pass down the sideline to Ryan Williams, kind of set it up, and then Jeremy Bernard with the corner route the corner route to Bernard, I thought, was a better throw than the one to Williams. Both good throws. I thought the throw to Bernard, though, was a little bit more in stride and on time.
I know you were thinking what I was thinking in that situation, too. After Wisconsin missed the field goal, there's still 36 seconds left, and Alabama has three timeouts, getting the ball to come out to start the third quarter after watching Nick Saban in Alabama over the previous 17 seasons. I know you're sitting there in that press box at Camp Randall going, wonder what DeBoer's going to do here with this time. Well, he kind of showed us. He stayed aggressive. And look, different styles can work. No one's arguing with what worked for Nick Saban. I mean, those show up in the form of trophies, and his status is the greatest to ever do it. But it was interesting to see Alabama be aggressive there with the timeouts. And you're right, that felt very daggerish, not just in terms of getting points right there before the half, but to do it in such a quick and easy sort of manner.
Yeah, Nick Saban's philosophy on that was that he generally he didn't want a negative offensive play or a big offensive pin, something to turn it around to where now maybe the defense is calling a timeout, right? See if we can get this ball back and maybe we'll take a shot.
And usually Nick had the better team, so you don't have to take as many chances, right?
But sure.
Yeah, sure.
Alabama definitely aggressive there, though. Jalen Milroe with a couple of big throws to give Alabama a significantly more comfortable halftime lead. What about the pass protection, Travis? We'll stay with the offense. Best pass protection I've seen from Alabama in a long time. Of course, Caden Proctor returned to make his season debut at left tackle. Elijah Pritchett, your starter on the right side. So the right tackle competition, according to Kalen DeBoer, is still ongoing. He says we're still going to see a good bit of Wilkin Formby going forward, at least in the short term. But Elijah Pritchett, I thought made a pretty good statement on the road in Camp Randall.
Yeah, that's understanding. You know, the Watts don't play at Wisconsin anymore, JJ or TJ or any of the Watts. But still, I agree. Took care of business, really. Came out a little bit of 6 and 7 man protection, maybe more so early, but then got the job done in some 5 man protections, a good bit of it, actually. And that was very encouraging, because that had been an anticipated scenario, right? Getting Caden Proctor in there at left tackle, Elijah Pritchett able to go on the right side. I get it where DeBoer's coming from, too. You know, keep that competition going there at right tackle. If there's not, in your opinion, a defined separation taking place, because we've already seen you're going to need more than two offensive tackles if you go as far into the season as you're hoping you're going to go.
No doubt. And you and I discussed, I think, on a recent podcast that the good Caden Proctor needed to be the one to come out and make this debut, not bad Caden, right? What was the old good Bo, bad Bo, the old Ole Miss quarterback? People, you remember?
Bo Wallace. Oh, absolutely. Bo Wallace,
yeah. This was good Caden, right? This looked like the Caden Proctor that was outstanding against LSU last year, the Caden Proctor that was outstanding against Georgia in the SEC championship game last year. So I thought it was a very positive sign for both he and the team that he got his season got off to a late start, obviously, but a fine start nonetheless.
Very strong and very in control, very sure of himself, it seemed like. Confidence is a big thing, even at the offensive tackle position. He looks like he's just fine in that regard. You also like penalties in general were minimized in this game. He had a couple of false starts there for the guard positions, but otherwise, pretty clean football. Kept the turnover column clean, took the ball away a couple times, had a fourth down stop or two. So, you know, it was going to take Wisconsin stealing some possessions and not just stealing them, probably getting set up in some really good field position to have a chance in this game. And Alabama didn't give the home team that opportunity.
Yeah, flipped around the issue with turnovers and flipped it around with penalties, both in this game. Of course, going back to the USF game the prior week, Alabama had 13 penalties and lost the turnover margin 3-0 in that one. So definitely made a big difference for Alabama to turn that around. And as long as we're talking about the offensive line, I thought the run blocking looked pretty solid at times too, Travis, sometimes more than solid. I mean, the 34-yard touchdown run that Jam Miller hit, the offensive line just completely wiped out Wisconsin's defense on that play, pushing those guys to the left. And then, of course, Miller just took it inside a couple of linebackers who I think were kind of hanging out to see what Milrow would do. And next thing you know, I mean, you could have driven a truck through that hole.
You're right. That conflict that Jalen puts you in with his legs, and they had run Jalen had pulled it on that same look a couple of plays or even a play earlier and hit the perimeter for a chunk gain. So when you get that kind of push, and then as you said, Jalen's presence and how it can impact maybe those edge guys or those extra defenders on the other side, keep those guys at home. It did. I mean, the hole for Jam Miller, you're right. The right side of the offensive line, Jaden Roberts, Elijah Pritchard, Robbie Oots was in on that too as a tight end. That it was good enough with that. But now when, you know, outside linebackers, DBs have to kind of stay at home because of the threat of Jalen. And then Jam Miller with that burst too. He doesn't need a lot of time. He doesn't need a lot of space. And then when he gets both, it's going to be a real problem.
No doubt. A heck of a run for Jam Miller. 9 for 71 on the ground for him. His yards per carry is up there, Travis, for sure. Haynes, too. But, and of course, they both went crazy in it from a yards per carry perspective against Western Kentucky. And only 3 games in, that still impacts the aggregate stats quite a bit. But, yeah, Miller's having a fine year for Alabama, no doubt about it. What about Ryan Williams? Touch on him really quickly. The outstanding freshman comes up with a huge touchdown, Alabama's first touchdown of the game on a pass that I thought was Milroe's best throw of the day. He kept that ball on a rope, pretty low line, which I liked because if you lay that ball out there with more trajectory, you're liable to run him out of the back of the end zone. Bad things happen when you make a guy – you know, kind of stumble into that corner. He hit him in stride and really in the perfect spot.
He did. A similar ball to Josh Cuevas, too, down the hash mark later in the game for a touchdown where he drove it in there. You did have a safety trying to get over the top. I thought Wisconsin safeties were going to have a hard time doing that against Alabama speed. But that was a very nice throw. It was a play that Alabama had run just earlier. Same formation, same everything with E-Man Henderson in the slot. They weren't able to hit it. Then they come back to it a short time later, this time with Ryan Williams, and he absolutely takes care of that situation. We also saw him return a punt in the game, and I thought he was going to run that back there for a second, you know, 20-yard punt return. This guy can do it all.
No doubt. Yeah, it's the third different punt returner we've seen from Alabama this season. If I'm not, Jalen Mbakwe replaced Cole Adams, right? So they are definitely into the subs when it comes to the punt returns. But yeah, Williams, just phenomenal. I took a close look at that first touchdown pass. And of course, we've already touched on the one he caught down the right sideline to set up that touchdown before the half. But on the first one, the cornerback was even with him at the 20. And by the time that two of them got to the goal line, Williams had 3 yards on him, right? Yeah. Which, guys with great speed is one thing, but a lot of times it takes a receiver might need 40 yards to beat a corner that bad. But if you can beat a guy by 3 yards when you're even at the 20, that's a burst.
And I think you just hit on it, because it was the same play to Emaan Henderson, and Emmanuel can run. Like, if you just want to clock him in a 40, he's probably comparable to a Ryan Williams, but he's probably more of a strider too. In other words, it takes him a little while to get to that top speed. He's not going to get maybe that early separation like a Ryan Williams can, because you just said it. I mean, it's 0 to 60 and under a second or two. And, you know, when you can create that kind of separation against defensive backs, you're going to do a lot of the things we've seen Ryan Williams do so far this season.
Real special stuff from Ryan Williams so far, no doubt about it. All right, on the defensive side of the ball, Travis, Kane Womack with his group with another fine effort. LT Overton played very well. Deontay Lawson played very well. A couple standouts. Keon Saab played well. Had a couple of pass breakups. Almost another pick. Saab's got 2 picks on the year. He's about this close from having 4 or 5.
Yeah.
So he's definitely been around the ball.
He is. He drove up on that little crossing route there. I think it was in the first quarter on Saturday. Had an opportunity and a couple of takeaways. That's what Kane Womack continues to harp on. You know, you can look at the run game. I think that's still an area where Alabama can certainly improve. Wisconsin, you know, a lot of that came in a game in which Alabama was up maybe 3 scores. So you look at it from that perspective too. And if you're the defensive staff, you're probably not going to just load up on the run when you're up 3 scores. You're essentially letting the other team run out the clock in a lot of ways. And situational defense going to continue to be a big thing, I think, for this defense. Third down, red zone, but they can certainly improve against the run because they know what's coming. I mean, Georgia's going to give them a lot of the same concepts they saw in the run game from Wisconsin on Saturday. And Tim Keenan continued to do some good things. I agree with you on LT Overton, man. He's fun to watch because he plays through the whistle. And, you know, Deontay Lawson with a forced fumble, Jod Campbell active once again. But, yeah, they need to clean some things up maybe in that front 6 or 7 before they get into a real fist fight with Georgia in the trenches.
Yeah, for sure. I thought the hit that Overton put from behind on Braden Locke, the backup quarterback that popped that fumble out early in the game, I thought that shook Locke. Now, he stood in there and made a couple of nice throws in this game. But I sense a level of discomfort, Travis.
Sped him up. Sped him up a little bit. Sped him up a little bit.
Big hit there for sure for LT Overton there. He's looking like he and Jamarion Latham are looking like a solid tandem at that bandit position. As you noted, Tim Keenan continues to be Alabama's most active interior defensive lineman. Does a lot of good things inside for the Crimson Tide. And you know, the substitution patterns for Kane Womack continues to be pretty aggressive, Travis. Seeing a lot of guys in the first half again defensively. Saw Jalen Mbakwe at a corner in the first half for a few reps. Yanze Pierre, Deshaun Jones. Womack is still, it seems to me, taking a lot of notes on a lot more than 11 guys. We'll put it that way.
Yeah, and then when it pays off when you lose a Malachi Moore like they did on Saturday in game. So you make the adjustment of Devontae Smith going to that safety position, maybe more Red Morgan at the Husky. You're absolutely correct. Through 3 games, Kane and Mo Lindquist and that staff, they have no problem rolling guys in there. Chad Robbins checking in here in the show chat, by the way, Chase, and we certainly encourage all of our viewers to do just that. And we thank you for jumping on live with us on a Sunday night. Chad says, Wisconsin was able to run the ball up the middle for success several times. Can we not give Wisconsin's offensive line some credit? You just did, Chad. Maybe right. Chad's a Wisconsin fan. I was pretty impressed. I mean, that's what I expect from Wisconsin, though. Even with Phil Longo in there now as the offensive coordinator.
Right.
You know, I think Ron Dayne and Jonathan Taylor, right, when I think Wisconsin. So, you know, I kind of expect Wisconsin to have some run game success.
Dane's name carved into the stadium at Camp Randall, I noticed when I was there.
Absolutely, so. Absolutely. And, you know, look, Tim Keenan, I think it just underscores how important he is to this defense because he is that war daddy type that can make it harder on offenses to run the football between the tackles. So, you know, they've had that luxury, like you said, of rotating guys, Chase. But when they get to Georgia and Mizzou and Tennessee, I'm going to be interested to see the how prolific they remain in that regard. Because if the Georgia game is what we think it's going to be, I think if you play 60 snaps on defense, let's just say you play 60, 65, I think Tim Keenan's got to probably be out there for 40.
Right.
You know? And right. That might be stretching him a little bit, but I think he's that important to this defensive front six or seven right now.
He needs to play as much as he can give him. He needs to give this Alabama defense relies on Tim Keenan a whole lot. Did last year too. Seems like this year, maybe even more so, but Tim Keenan's having a super year. Deontay Lawson again with a good, a fine game, comes up with that big hit on a fourth and one for a turnover on downs in the first half. Travis saw that. Came through the gap and stoned the running back. Really nice tackle there. Little bit of a bone to pick for me with the official score. If you look at the stats, Deontay Lawson didn't get a TFL or even an assisted TFL. I don't know how that's possible.
Did they give it to Keenan?
Well, I think.
Because I saw Lawson and Keenan there is who I saw.
Lawson for he sure made first. The initial yeah. hit. And maybe he at least should have had an assist.
Yeah, I agree. And no doubt. I mean, he shot that gap, like you said. I thought it helped Alabama right there to get the replay review too, because if Wisconsin goes fast there on that fourth and a half yard, you probably don't get Tim Keenan on the field right there. Mm-hmm. And with the review timeout, you were able to kind of regroup and get the personnel out there for the fourth and short that I'm sure you wanted. Mm-hmm. And also the play call that you wanted, which was obviously to bring Deontay through the A gap. And, you know, the play before Deontay and Sab had kind of knocked each other off the wide receiver that kind of was able to set up that fourth and short. It was third and 14.
Right.
You're letting them check it down. You're going to rally, make the tackle short. But it ended up setting up that fourth and short, and it worked out just fine for Alabama.
Yeah, disappointing down for Alabama on that third and 14 to let it get that close to the first down marker. They were able to clean it up on fourth and one. But you're right, that third and 14 was as good as Wisconsin could have hoped for. On the injury front, Travis, Quay Rousseau, Malachi Moore, Richard Young, the three primary guys banged up out of this game for Alabama, Rousseau and Young with leg injuries of some kind. Malachi Moore took a ding to the head. Sounds like he's going to be all right, especially with the bye week coming up before the Georgia game. But the Quay Rousseau injury, that's definitely one to watch. The Quay Rousseau injury is going to be the one folks will be asking about over the next couple weeks.
They will, and I think where that could potentially be problematic is that he is a stout wolf. He's evolving into a pretty good pass rusher too, but early downs against a team like Georgia, you're going to need your best out there against the run and setting edges and things like that. Although Alabama uses this wolf position in different ways. I mean, we see him lined up behind the nose tackle sometimes. I'm still trying to figure it all out, but ultimately it comes down to physicality in a game like Georgia. Usually And that's where you're going to need Quay Rousseau if you can have him. Otherwise, you know, you're getting more into Q Robinson, who is a very nice situational player as a pass rusher. Had his third sack in his mini game Saturday. Keanu Coote, you know, we saw on Saturday, but that's where I think Quay, if he can't go against Georgia, that's where you'll miss him.
Yeah, I'm no doctor, and you know, you never know with injuries. Sometimes they linger, sometimes they don't. Sometimes these young kids can bounce back, especially if you're not a lineman, you don't weigh a ton, and on a lower leg injury, you can bounce back quicker than people think. One indicator that I've kind of seen over the years, Travis, I'm sure you've noticed the same thing. I look for when they're going off the field with a knee or an ankle or a foot or anything, really anything below the waist, I look for how much weight they're putting on that foot on their way off the field. Mm-hmm. And for Rousseau and Richard Young both, the answer was almost none.
Right.
So at least from a pain standpoint, those two guys were hurting pretty bad going off the field.
Yeah, those were hot, those injuries. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And we'll see. You know, you even think about it in terms of the running back position, because we've seen this with Alabama before. We're seeing it with Texas already this season. You got five scholarship backs in the preseason. Oh, we got plenty. We're not going to be able to get all these guys enough work.
Right.
Then you get to mid-October, early November, and you're down to like two. And we've seen that at Alabama in the past too. So you just hope that those guys are it's nothing that's season ending for them. We know it isn't with Malachi. You hope that's not the case with Quay and also Richard Young. And I thought it was interesting, too, because they had Richard Young out there to start the third quarter, you know, with the offense. So it was good to see them get him involved pretty quickly there.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. He was out there right away in the second half. And, you know, I think he's a guy to watch for. I know it looks like the running back rotation is going to be pretty Saban-ish in terms of how it's divided in terms of reps and carries. It's a two-man game. But I assuming Young's injury isn't too bad to keep him out for long, I do expect to see a good bit more of him as the season progresses. Like you said, you can't have enough backs. They're always getting banged up. It's the most injury-prone position on the field, no question. Punter, however, is not an injury-prone position. What about James Burnup, Travis? Big game for him, four punts, averaged 53 yards. Three of them were inside the 20, one of them to the five. I saw that Wisconsin punt returner, fair catch, one at the five, and the first thing I thought was, he better be glad Nick Saban's not his coach.
I'll tell you what, it's not an injury-prone position, but Burnup was putting a heightened on some pigskin Saturday.
Yeah.
At Camp Randall. He was tremendous, man. And I hear you on the fair catch at the five, but with the way this guy can hang it up, I'm thinking if you're a return guy, you can just get lost back there. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you're just mesmerized in some ways by the hang time, and you're just trying to make sure you field the football cleanly. You can't really think about where you're at on the field. He was great. Absolutely great. You know, that's big too, because as explosive as this offense has been, there are going to be games coming up real soon where you're going to need a guy that can do that. And this Alabama defense, there's been some real positives, but that side is still going to be more of the unknown, I think, going into Georgia. And so to have a punter like that, if he can duplicate what he did at Wisconsin, that's a real weapon.
Dare I say it looked a little J.K. Scottish out there at Camp Randall Stadium with the hang time.
This should be Burnup's J.K. Scott era right now. Yeah. His fourth year, really talented guy, took some time to get adapted to this American stuff, but he's always had it in him. It's just, you know, he's still pretty new to it, I think.
You know, pound for pound, over the last 2 years, he's one of the most improved players on the team. He didn't have this kind of distance nor this kind of consistency when he first got the job.
And not to get too granular with Burnett, but he's a damn good holder too. I mean, he does a nice job on field goal, extra point. So he fills a couple of roles that are important, but punting, obviously, with what he can do there, that can be a separator. I mean, we saw J.K. Scott on multiple occasions, I think, be the difference in games, especially close games when he was at Alabama. I think I think back to 2014 Arkansas, that abysmal offensive performance in the mist and the rain in Fayetteville for Alabama that season. And J.K. Scott was absolutely the difference in that one-point win over the Razorbacks.
Speaking of special teams, this is a little bit off the path, but you mentioned before the show you saw the Jags game today. What do you think of the new NFL kickoff style, and do you think the NCAA will institute that at some point in the next few years?
It's just laughable to me, though, the whole safety thing in football, because we always start by taking care of the pros before we start taking care of the kids.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's crazy. You know, we're going to go to this kickoff.
That's supposed to trickle up, not down.
Nobody, right. Nobody worries about it. I go to high school games. You go to a high school game on Friday night, you talk about targeting.
Yeah.
I'll see four or five. If it's good teams, higher level teams, I'll see four or five hits maybe a game that if there was targeting called like it should be in high school, like it is in college, you'd have that many ejections.
Mm-hmm.
Youth football. You see targeting at the kid level, but I think it's a good alternative. You know, I think it's going to be interesting to see if the NFL makes the adjustment of not being as generous with field position for the kicking team if you kick it through the end zone and you put the ball at the 30. Because that's not encouraging covering kicks or returns. If you want returns in this format, I think you're going to have to say, look, you kick it out of the end zone, we're putting it at 35 or 40. So kind of force the kicking team into doing that. But I would think it's coming to college football, but there are things that I've thought from a player safety perspective were coming to college football, and you still don't see it. You see the long whistle, in college football. NFL, man, as soon as there is contact, a collision, that whistle blows. They blow that thing dead
right
now. College football, you'll have a scrum. You'll have a scrum for 7, 8, 10 seconds before a whistle comes in.
Yeah.
Late hits, you know, things like that. Protecting the quarterback. Are you kidding me?
Right.
I mean, compared to the NFL, we don't. Yeah, college football doesn't give a damn about the quarterbacks.
Nah, comparatively, it doesn't. All right, we'll go around the SEC for a few minutes quickly. Travis, like we always do, some games of note as always. Let's start in Lexington, where the Wildcats hung with Georgia 13-12, the final score. Of course, Georgia has an idle week upcoming before they play in Tuscaloosa. But offensively, Georgia looked shaky in this one, Travis.
They did, you know, and I know they had an injury up front, you know, to that offensive line. That's pretty important. So that'll be worth watching going into this bye week and perhaps into Alabama the next week. But Mike Bobo, it's a love-hate relationship with that Georgia fan base. I think there's a lot of Georgia people that appreciate Mike going back to his time as a quarterback for the Dogs, but woo, they get after him. And I think that offense in general gave the fan base some ammunition for that on Saturday. I give Kentucky a lot of credit, man, because they were awful against South Carolina on their home field the week before. But I thought if you're an Alabama fan or you're Alabama, you're thinking, and we talked about this with Alabama's run defense, I thought Kentucky hung in just fine in the trenches, you know, which probably surprised me as much as anything. So I see where Texas, I guess, jumped to number one in the AP. So
things
there too. Yeah. Dogs jump. Keep winning though. I mean, it's the same thing for Alabama. We won't really know until a week from Saturday night. And two Saturdays, we're going to know a lot more. You know, we know a little bit through three games. I get asked stuff about this Alabama team. Are you concerned that they don't sustain drives? Well, I mean, they're averaging over 40 points per game.
Right.
I mean, it's hard to average 42, 45 points per game and also hold the football for 40 minutes, you know?
When you're springing long touchdowns, that's the opposite of
sustained. Yeah, but they're not hanging on to the ball.
Right.
You know, they're not hanging on to the ball. Well, you know what? One of their last drives, if not their last drive, yesterday was with the twos, and they hung on to it for like 6:30 of the fourth quarter. They took the clock, as Nick Saban used to say. It's a long season, and there's chapters of this thing. There's blanks to this thing that you don't get all the answers in the first 3 weeks, right? Oh. It takes some time. So I think for Georgia, Alabama, some of these other teams, we're still waiting on some of those answers.
What about the Mark Stoops punt decision with a few minutes to go? Are you piling on like the rest of America, or do you defend it? What'd you see there?
I forget what the down and distance was.
Yeah, well, it was.
That means everything. I mean, it's easy to say go for it, but if it's 4th and 12.
No, nah, it wasn't anything like
got,
that.
And you've got your timeouts. I didn't think it was. Yeah. I remember thinking, boy, that's a defensive guy as a head coach right there.
Right.
Because that's what a lot of those guys will do. Yeah, I mean, sure. Well, I mean, at that point, what do you got to lose, right? I mean, you're a 20-plus point underdog playing on your home field. Go ahead and take your shot. But did it necessarily surprise me? No.
Yeah. They were on their own 48-yard line with 3:09 to play. And what I'm looking at right now is it was indeed a 4th and 13. So,
well, and you're only down a point, right? You need is 3.
Yeah.
So I don't have as much of a problem, I guess, with that on 4th and 13. And you've got your timeouts.
Stoops is thinking, I didn't want to give up points, right?
And you've done a number on that offense, you know, I mean, it's not like you're in a shootout. If it's 43-41 in that situation, then you might have to take your shot, but you've done a good job. It's 4th and 13. You can pin them here, get a stop. Then you're only down a point. You're not down. If you're down a touchdown there, maybe it's a little different thing, because if you're going to have to go the length of the field, get it in the end zone. To me, that's a different deal.
It is. And if you don't get the 4th and 13, Georgia's only got to convert a couple, three first downs to stick to just to score 3. Well, now you're down 4, which means you got to go back with a touchdown. Field goal doesn't help you. So it was an interesting decision for sure.
AK's already ready to talk Bama, Georgia here. Chase, yes. We won't do too much of that tonight, but AK says, I don't think UGA's offense is all that great. Bama's got a better quarterback and skill players. Oof. Some Alabama fans still argue with you about that. Georgia's probably got a better defense, although Bama's is pretty stout. Here's the thing about Georgia. Some of the stuff that you were able to do against the back end, especially of Wisconsin's defense, and I'm talking more about the safety positions than even the corners, but you ain't going to get against Malachi Starks what you got against 14 and 24.
Ricardo Hallman, no doubt.
It's going to be a little different deal, but I hear you, AK. And by the way, we appreciate you chiming in. And also, for any of you out there that haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel here, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. Hit that notification bell while you're at it. That way you are alerted to all of our content as it drops here on the channel. And if you wouldn't mind, a thumbs up would be greatly appreciated as well.
How about a thumbs down on Florida?
Don't do that. They'll hit that one too. Oh, Florida boy. That's a rough situation. I mean, it's bad when now after every loss, you get these reports of emergency board of trustees meetings and things like that.
Never good.
It's rough for Billy Napier. Other than the fact that he's probably looking at $30 million. If he does get the axe, this season, but That's a hard football team to watch, man. I know they were hoping for some magic from DJ Lagway. That's not really fair to put him in that situation 3 games into his college career. In fact, it was Marcel Reed, right? A Texas A&M getting the start for Connor Wegman.
Right.
That sort of, you know, stepped up onto the stage there for the Aggies. So rough times in Gainesville right now, good bread.
And this game was so much worse than 33-20. I mean, it looked more like 43-10 out there. Florida just, they didn't have anything on offense. A lot of confusion, I thought. Some undisciplined stuff on Florida's part. Some lack of effort I saw here and there out there. It just doesn't look like Billy Napier has much of a voice in his locker room right now. And We'll see if there's an interim coach plugged in there by the end of the season, but I don't know how Billy survives it. I don't think
he does. And I guess, you know, there's Mississippi State this weekend, this Saturday, and Starkville, and I don't know if we're going to talk about what Mississippi State looked like at home against a MAC school on Saturday night. But maybe the Gators are able to win in Starkville. I think there's a bye week coming up for Florida. So there's some kind of those mile markers that you think about if you're going to go in season with the interim route.
Down on the Plains, quarterback change for the Auburn Tigers. Hank Brown, Travis, 4 touchdown passes and a win over New Mexico. The Tigers searching for answers on the offensive side of the ball as hard as they can, and they decided to shake it up at the quarterback position. Hugh Freeze said that he made the decision when he watched film on Monday coming out of that loss to Cal. But I think he said he didn't tell the players until Thursday. But quarterback change afoot right there. And, you know, my thought on it, Travis, is you're the head coach. You're an offensive guy. You're supposed to be an offensive guru, right? And a modern offensive guru at that.
Right.
And in your second year, you've changed OCs and you've changed quarterbacks. Not much left to change except – head coach, right? If the offense doesn't move it.
No, it's been surprising to me because I think Hugh is that highly regarded. Certainly Nick Saban holds Hugh Freeze as a football guy and an offensive guy.
Tried to hire him.
Yeah, very high esteem. But for whatever reason to this point, and I know you can look at Peyton Thorne, I still don't. When I look at Auburn's offensive line, too, a big part of what Hugh likes to do is still run the football. And you got Jarquez Hunter. You know, you've got some solid backs there. Now you've got these young receivers, some transfers that have helped there on the outside. It's kind of hard to explain. And we'll see if the change really does much. You know, it was the point where I think if you were even going to consider that and take a look at it, New Mexico was the game because you're about to get into Oklahoma and some SEC play. And that's not when you want to be going through that situation.
That's going to be a wrap for the Talking Tide podcast. Want to thank the listeners and the viewers for joining Travis and myself for this edition of the Sunday Nighter. We will go dark for the idle week, but we'll come back here in roughly 10 days to preview that huge Alabama-Georgia game in Bryant-Denny Stadium coming up on September 28th. And so until that midweeker ahead of that big game, for Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodbread. We're signing off right here on Talking Tide.